Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for November 21st in the year of our Lord, 2022. This is Hour 2 of 2, with the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Welcome to the broadcast with Dr. Scott Bradley. We talked about the doctrine of the lesser magistrates, and I think it's a good premise in general. The only hesitancy I have about it is it's based on this perceived idea that somehow the worldly order of things determines who's the higher magistrate. Okay, so, you know, Bill Clinton is a higher magistrate than Richard Mack. Well, that's not really true. Richard Mack won. He was the highest magistrate because his ideas were God-ordained. See, whenever we're aligned with God, we are the highest magistrate, regardless of what the world thinks is the fundamental point, ladies and gentlemen. God is the supreme magistrate. So anytime anyone aligns themselves with God, they are the highest magistrate. Whenever the further you get from God or the supreme magistrate, right, then you're on the right side of history, but you're also not the lesser magistrate. That's just what the world thinks. So you got to be very careful with that. The book has some great points made. And I agree that, you know what? God is the supreme magistrate. God is the supreme magistrate. We got to understand that. And when we align ourselves with God, we're not the lesser of anything. All right, there you have it. Lowell Nelson's with me. CampaignForLiberty.org. Do you want to make a comment on that before we go on?
Well, it reminds me of the proper understanding of government, the proper role of government, right? I mean, God created man, gave him life, and then the second most wonderful gift, which was his agency, meaning he made man accountable for his own actions, gave him the freedom to make his own decisions, but made him accountable for those decisions. And so you have God came along first, created man, and then man got together and decided, okay, we're going to be in a society. We need some rules, and so we will write the rules for our society, embody those in a constitution, and then fill public offices with volunteers, people who are willing to run the, you know, enforce the rules of society. And so basically it's a food chain, right? You have God, you have man, you have a constitution. There are many constitutions, state constitutions, and also the general government constitution.
In other words, you have the contracts.
Yeah, the agreements, basically, that have the force of law in that society. And then finally, you have the public servants who volunteer to who are elected to execute those agreements, and they are the lowest on the food chain.
And the further the government gets from the people, the lower on the food chain it becomes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly right. And so if we look at the food chain in the proper light, in the proper order, then we realize, and we'll always realize that that God is at the top. Then comes man and his rights and God foreordained freedoms, and then the Constitution, and then finally the government officials, the public servants who we choose to execute those agreements. Sam?
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I just wanted to kind of bridge with that. Now, Ron Paul writes an incredible column to help us understand a tale of two midterms. This is really critical to kind of understand the difference of what we were pushing for then and now, and the results we get. Well, I should say the elections we get as a result. Lol?
Yes, he contrasts the midterms of 2010 with the two midterms of just a couple weeks ago. Which I thought was very interesting that he would make that observation. he observed that the winds of 2010 were propelled by the Tea Party and the Liberty Movement. Now, he was a key part of that movement. Those of you old enough to remember will know that John Paul, virtually unknown in 2008 when he first ran, but virtually everybody knew him when he ran in 2012. And it was the great and almost overwhelming number of people supporting Ron Paul who created this movement, this Liberty Movement of 2008 and 10 and 12. And so the wins in 2010 midterm came because of that Liberty Movement. Now, what was the focus of the Liberty Movement then? Well, it was on restoring constitutional government in all areas. And it was also ending our interventionist foreign policy. It was changing our monetary policy by auditing and then ending the Federal Reserve System and legalizing alternative currencies. Now, those were very bold goals or objectives of the Liberty Movement. Thousands and thousands of people, hundreds of times over, chanting, end the Fed, end the Fed, over and over. I mean, that's how big this movement was 12 years ago. And they won because the people of, during those elections of the 2010 midterm, they won because they promised they would work to restore limited constitutional, fiscally responsible government in all areas. Okay, that was then. Well, what did the Republican candidates do for the 22 midterm, the one that held just 2 weeks ago? Well, in contrast, he writes, in 2022, the average Republican candidate offered little in the way of a substantive agenda. In fact, few Republicans called for reversing President Biden's massive spending increases, much less for restoring the federal government to its constitutional limitations. Despite the controversy over new critical race theory and transgender-related policies in government schools, there has not been a renewed push to shut down the Department of Education, end of quote. In other words, folks, he's making an observation that most of the candidates this year were milquetoast, basically. That's what he's saying. I think he's correct. Now, there were some notable exceptions. Governor DeSantis in Florida, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, and Kentucky Representative Thomas Massey were some of those exceptions. They won their elections in a landslide, folks, and basically they spit in the face of big spending, mask mandates, COVID passports, and lockdowns. They the rest of the candidates were pretty much milquetoast in comparison to those people who won landslide elections. Now, Ron Paul concludes his column with one hopeful paragraph, Sam, and I'm going to want your comments about this after I quote him. He says, quote, as the failure of our welfare warfare state to deliver peace and property and the failure of the Federal Reserve to fulfill its mandate of ensuring stable prices and low unemployment, as those things become clear, more Americans will join the Liberty Movement. Support for the Liberty Movement will accelerate when the inevitable economic meltdown occurs. This meltdown will be precipitated by a collapse in the dollar's value and the rejection of the dollar's world reserve currency status. It will bring the end of the welfare warfare state and the fiat monetary system. Hopefully, the Liberty Movement will ensure the welfare warfare state and fiat monetary system are replaced by a return to limited constitutional government, individual liberty, and peace. End of quote. Well, Sam, I think he is tacitly saying that we will not see a return to constitutionally limited government until after the demise of the fiat dollar. What do you think, Sam?
I sadly think that he's probably right. I pray that enough of us stand up beforehand to create an organizational stability structure. If we don't, and you're not careful, you're going to have most of the country in anarchy, most of the country in a dog-eat-dog kind of scenario. I hope, and in the Rocky Mountains, for example, we have other organizations outside of government that could create stability. Neighborhood watch programs are kind of a loose-knit idea of them. In Utah and Idaho and other places, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has a structure on the ground of organization as well. So I agree with his general point. I hope enough of us can be wiser and stand up for the cause of liberty and organize ourselves before that. Because really, the safety and stability and very lives of people will be at stake when that happens. It's going to become, you know, people change when they're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
People change when they're literally freezing cold. Mm-hmm. And we've documented on this radio program many times what happens to people. Good, normal people lose their minds. They lose mm-hmm. their moral compass in desperation. And so I understand his point. I don't disagree with it one bit, but I pray and hope that we can organize ourselves into some semblance of working together in ways that can preserve life and preserve virtue and preserve some of those things that go by the wayside. That's my concern. That's, you know, the baser elements of reality take over at that point. And I hope we build a structure to guard against those things when it happens. Will it happen, as he wisely points out? Absolutely. There's no way to avoid it. Whenever you have fiat money, it eventually happens. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And it's a matter of how prepared we are when it goes down, Lowell.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Sam. I believe we have a responsibility as citizens to prepare ourselves and to do all we can to stop the slide toward, you know, anarchy. And I think you're right. There's a lot of good organizations around us. Let's be a part of them. Let's be a part of the solution, folks.
All right, let's skip the break real quick. We got too much to talk about, too little time, ladies and gentlemen. A tale of two midterms. Ron Paul points to the fact that in 2010 and around that time frame, we were focused on key fundamental, in my opinion, law and order principles. This last time, we were not based on those principles. We virtually made no appropriate promises and delivered on virtually nothing except for the other guys are bad and hey, we'll, you know, whatever. That's why we lost. If we want to come back to winning again, we've got to put winning principles in place. We need to have the liberty movement's focus. As Ron Paul says, we got to restore constitutional government in all areas. We got to get rid of our interventionist foreign policy and replace it with a humble foreign policy. We got to go back to honest money if we want an honest society. It is that clear, that simple. Praise to Ron Paul for his incredible column highlighting this. RonPaulInstitute.org for more. All right, we want to talk about saving Arizona and other states. I guess they've got these proven reforms for fair elections. I don't know, Mahatma Orwell, I guess, is a pseudonym being used to write this column, right?
Boy, I don't know if it's his real name or pseudonym, but he's got the last name Orwell. That's a little scary. And the first name Mahatma. So you make your own conclusion.
I believe it's a pseudonym.
Yeah, probably.
But here's the interesting thing. He's got these 10 proven reforms, but you know what? We can talk about his reforms really quick. But I'm in the middle for the CSPOA. I don't know if you know, Lowell, but I'm now the CEO of the CSPOA.
You're the man.
And I am writing a document that is like that. I've got 10 ideas as well. Mine are slightly different than his. He's fine with election machines. I think you'll never get a handle on election fraud if you allow machines. So quickly go over his 10. Then I want to give you my 10 that I'm in the middle of writing. We're about to release a document on this from the CSPOA.
Yeah, I share your skepticism for machines. In fact, if I had my druthers, we'd have zero computers, zero ballot counting, nothing electronic. Just make it all by hand. But his things, number one, maintain and annually update accurate lists of eligible voters. That's the
now,
voter
I've got
role.
That on mine, too. Mine's a little
Perfect.
More detailed, but agreed.
Number two, encourage in-person voting.
Yeah, amen.
Amen. Number three, mail an absentee ballot to a voter only if the voter requests it.
Amen.
Number four, voters should provide secure ID when registering to vote, when requesting an absentee ballot, and when voting.
Amen. But I go further in mine.
Yeah, good. Five, ban ballot harvesting.
I agree 100%. Although I believe if we put certain things in place, we don't need to ban so many things because they'll be by nature gone. We can discuss that in a minute, but go ahead.
Perfect. Number six, have election day instead of election month.
Amen.
Number seven, all ballots should be received by election day, counted on election day, and publicly reported that night.
Agreed.
Right. And the other 3 points, I think we can just skip over. I didn't necessarily agree with the other three.
Yeah, just highlight them really quick, because I think it's important to kind of show where we differ.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can do that. So the voter, not the state, should decide how to vote is what he's saying here. Do not trust mailed ballots. And we sort of covered that already, but that was another of his points. And then ballot handling and counting should be bipartisan and open to poll watchers, and machines should be repeatedly tested and audited.
Yeah. See, and there I think they go off the rails. They don't understand. They will never have an honest elections as long as you let a system do it where you cannot have the transparency necessary. So for the CSPOA, I'm working on a document with a few people. I wrote it, and I'm having a few people refine it now, but here's what it says. CSPOA solutions for rebuilding trust in the United States elections. Now listen, the value of political stability is the subtitle. And then we say this, personal responsibilities for all registered voters. I've got 10 items as well, and they're a lot similar to what he's got, but they're worded differently to encompass a more holistic approach.
Cool.
Here it is. Number one, become an informed, committed vote in person, VIP voter. In other words, know everything on the ballot before election day. Okay, you've got to vote in person, and you got to know what's on the ballot before election day. That's number one. Because if you don't do those things, it's disaster. Having voters that go to the polls and vote a straight Republican ticket, or who go to the polls and don't know what's on the ballot, and they just kind of figure out what they think is best or whatever, or look for names they recognize or whatever, their votes are damaging. Their votes are counterproductive. So number one, become an informed, committed, vote in person, VIP voter. Know everything on the ballot before election day. That's number one. Number two, return to precinct by precinct voting with hand-counted ballots on single-day elections. Let me say that again. Return to precinct-by-precinct voting with hand-counting of ballots on single-day election. All right, what do you think of those two, Lowell?
Well, spot on. Absolutely. Excellent.
All right, here's
exactly
the third
what we
one.
Need to get back to. Yeah.
Here's the third one. Become a precinct leader, certified positions poll worker, or poll watcher. Okay? People have got to do that in mass. Okay?
We used to do that, Sam. You know, 20, 30 years ago, everybody went to the polls, and they would see three of their neighbors there, you know?
That's
and
right.
Usually little old ladies that, you know, in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, who just took upon themselves the civic responsibility of administering the election in their neighborhood.
When I grew up, my mom was one of those older ladies, and we used to have voting at our house.
Cool.
Become a precinct leader. We're talking about certified positions, poll worker or poll watcher. That's number three. We've got to return to precincts, and we've got to return to that, because you've got to get rid of these massive groups of people where you don't know anybody. You got to go in there and say hi to half the people there. Maybe not literally, but that is the point, right? All right, number four, return to paper ballots, only eligible and registered voters may request a return and absentee ballot, all right? So you got to return to paper ballots, period. And then you've got to have only those who request a ballot get one for absentee. Number five, require video recorded coverage and archives publicly available of all ballots counted. Let me say that again. Number five, require video recorded coverage and archives publicly available of all votes counted. Number six, require all ballot watchers / counters / tabulators certify in writing as to the accuracy of the final count under the penalty of perjury. Okay? Make all those people involved in the ballots, watching whatever you're doing, every one of them have to sign a document under the penalty of perjury that the count is accurate. And if you say, well, Sam, we can't make it perfect, you can write even to the best of my knowledge. You know, if you want a little bit of wiggle room. But the point is, you've got, if it's good enough for my taxes, it's good enough for my sacred vote, lol.
You could even do that for the actual voter, saying, like, this is my vote.
Well, hold on. We're getting to that.
Oh, okay, good.
That's a different topic. This is only to hold the officials accountable at this point. Number seven, require every state in the union to retain and to preserve all ballot records and election papers for 36 months under the penalty of violation. So you're going to have to keep that stuff long enough, 36 months, or we can put in whatever number we want there, but it's got to be long enough to be past the next election, and it's got to be long enough to really let anybody who really has a question have time to work through that.
I think the current requirement is 23 months.
All right. Well, some say it's 22, and I think we need to extend that because it doesn't even go to the next election cycle. So the problem is you lose all the records before the next election cycle happens. I don't know about that. All right, number eight. Do all within your power to remove your state from and or prevent your state from joining the Electronic Registration Information Center, also nicknamed ERIC. You've got to get out of that, folks, because you will never be able to control your own voter rolls if you don't. That's number eight. Do all within your power to get out of or not join ERIC, the Electronic Record the Electronic Registration Information Center. Got to get out of it. Number nine, require every state in the union to update, secure, and multi-party certify all voter rolls and voter registration systems. Okay, in other words, not only do you have to get rid of ERIC, you got to have your state be responsible and confirm that the voter rolls are accurate by multi-party. Again, those people would need to sign under the penalty of perjury that the voter rolls are accurate to the best of their ability. Number 10, require all voters to confirm their identity by displaying / showing proof of state ID certified via signature tied to every legally counted ballot. Those are my 10.
I love them. Right?
And if we can refine this further, what I'm trying to do, though, Lowell, a little bit, is not make the document too long.
Yeah.
I want it to be simple enough where we can actually deal with it. And I kind of jokingly said we got to have the 12 steps to vote recovery, you know, like the Alcoholics Anonymous thing. You know, we got to have it short. It's got to be clear. It's got to be easy for folks to focus on. But those are my 10 things. And I don't know if I've left anything out important. I don't mind adding things if you can get to me, Lowell. If you have some ideas, you're free to express them here, but I'd also like you to email them to me. How can we make this stronger and more holistic, but yet not make it too long? That's kind of the balance that we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, totally love it. I know that the John Birch Society in the New American Magazine had, 12, 15, 18 bullet points related to election integrity. So if you've already double-checked against that list,
Email me that list, and I will double-check against that list. I want mine to be short and holistic, and that's kind of why I've written it the way I do. The big dissension, if you will, between us and these guys that, Saving Arizona and other states, 10 proven reforms for fair elections. My big problem with it is they still accept machines.
I know.
I'm telling you right now, unless you go to paper ballots and hand counting and single-day voting, you'll never solve the problems. There's too much wiggle room in it, folks. Let's take a quick pause. We'll come back with our dear brother, Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. We got a lot to talk about on your radio, don't we?
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You-
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Five people were killed and 25 injured when a gunman opened fire inside an LGBTQ nightclub Saturday in Colorado Springs, Colorado. A man shrouded in body armor, 22-year-old Anderson Lee Aldrich, was taken down by a couple of patrons and probably saved many lives. One witness talked with KMGH 7 in Denver, Joshua Thurman.
It was so scary. I heard shots, broken glass, bodies. It was... How? Why?
Walt Disney's board of directors overnight replaced chief executive Bob Chapek with Robert Iger, the company's former chairman and CEO who left the company at the end of last year. Susan Arnold, chairman of Disney's board of directors, said in a statement that Bob Iger is uniquely situated to lead the company through this pivotal period, end quote. This month, the company reported weaker than expected fourth quarter financials. Parts of New York finally caught a break Sunday after a storm lashed out a potential record-setting amount of snow on cities and towns east of Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. That includes Buffalo, New York. The National Weather Service recorded 77 inches in Orchard Park. That's the stadium where the NFL Buffalo Bills play. There was also 72 inches in Natural Bridge near Watertown. More than a week after four University of Idaho students were stabbed to death in a house near campus, the police chief leading the investigation said on Sunday that the police had not been able to answer many questions. Captain Roger Lanier with the Moscow, Idaho Police Department.
Currently, there are no suspects in custody, and we have not located a weapon.
We do have a short work week. Thanksgiving is Thursday. USA Radio News.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-568-2790. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you, except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-568-2790. That's 800-568-2790. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with, call Big Lou at 800-568-2790.
You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live, hosted by Sam Bushman. I am his guest this hour, Lowell Nelson, reporting. The Epoch Times published an article on Saturday reporting that there are 22 states urging the Biden administration to repeal the COVID-19 vaccine mandate for health care workers, quote, in light of how vaccines provide little to no protection against infection and the growing awareness of side effects from the shots, end quote. Now, this is a good news, bad news story, really, you know, bittersweet, right? Because obviously it's bad news that COVID came along and the COVID-19 clot shots were invented. But it's good news that the states have recognized that the clot shot provides little to no protection against infection. These are their words. And it's also good news that they've recognized that there are significant adverse side effects from the shots, which I like to call the clot shots. They even say outright in a November 17 missive, you know, to the Biden administration that evidence, quote, demonstrates that full vaccination doesn't prevent infection or transmission, end quote. Well, so you've got the Attorney General of Montana, Austin Knudsen. He highlighted one of the consequences of requiring healthcare workers to be vaccinated because some of them quit working, which meant there are fewer people in the healthcare industry to help people who actually needed healthcare. He said in a statement, quote, the mandate has limited many patients' access to needed medical care and imposed substantial costs on patients and healthcare workers without any corresponding benefits. The Biden administration should have never imposed this mandate, and CMS should now throw it in the trash bin where it belongs. End of quote. Well, so the attorneys general of 22 states, they're the ones asking the Biden administration to allow healthcare workers to live free and to work free, to go to work without having to get the clot shot that has killed or damaged so many thousands of people already, heart inflammation being the chief concern. So which states are making this request? Well, the attorneys general from the following states are making this request: Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, and Wyoming. Now, that's the good news. What's the bad news? Well, it's the bad news, folks, that the attorneys general are making this request because their request is evidence that they do not understand the foundation of the U.S. Constitution, which is that the general government, of which the Biden administration is just one part, has only the specific powers enumerated or listed in the U.S. Constitution, and that the states or the people in the states retain all other power. So, is the regulation of healthcare workers a power or an authority that the states granted to the general government? Well, no. Obviously, no. This authority is not enumerated, it's not listed, it's not specified in the U.S. Constitution. Therefore, the general government has no authority, zero, to have imposed such an edict. States should have ignored the mandate from its inception or from its imposition. Now, why don't these attorneys general understand the foundation of the U.S. Constitution? Well, because we, the people of this country, do not understand it. It's our fault, folks. We need to understand this principle and then talk about it with our colleagues and neighbors, and especially talk about it with our attorneys general, our state legislators, our gubernatorial candidates. Anyone who is running for public office should understand this. Now, Thomas Jefferson called the 10th Amendment the foundation of the U.S. Constitution. Did you get that, folks? He called it the foundation. That's like the most important part of any structure is the foundation, right? The 10th Amendment is the foundation of the U.S. Constitution. If you don't understand why he said that, then you need to study it deeply, more deeply, and study it until you do understand it.
Well, let's say it simply like this. We delegate certain authority to the general government. We divide that authority into three branches and give them their marching orders via the Constitution, the contract. And then we, through the 10th Amendment, say anything that we did not give you authority by the contract, you don't have, period. And so it's the two-sided coin. Here's your delegated authority. We're going to make a list for each branch. Then we're going to say to you, anything not in your list isn't there. You got it? Good. And so that's why the 10th Amendment is the really the framework, okay, to understand. 10thAmendmentCenter.com for more details. But the federal government's only authorized to exercise those powers delegated to it, lol.
Absolutely right, Sam. Spot on. Now, the 10thAmendmentCenter.com right there has posted a very excellent summary of the 10th Amendment. You got it from Sam, and now this is what the 10th Amendment Center says about it. The 10th Amendment doesn't add anything to the Constitution, nor does it take anything away, but it serves a very important function. It tells us how to interpret the document. Think of it like a lens through which we evaluate everything the federal government does. The 10th Amendment makes explicit two fundamental constitutional principles that are implicit in the document itself. Number one, the federal government is only authorized to exercise those powers delegated to it. Exactly what Sam said. Number two, the people of the several states retain the authority to exercise any power that is not delegated to the federal government as long as the Constitution doesn't expressly prohibit it. So in a nutshell, the federal government has a very limited number of things it's authorized to do. These powers are listed throughout the Constitution. most power and authority remains with the state, either with the state government or with the people themselves, as they determine in each state.
And the state constitution is the contract on the state level, where, again, they delegate certain authority to the state, and the state government is only authorized to exercise those powers delegated to it through the state constitutions, and the people of the several states maintain or retain authority from not only the general government via the constitution, but the state as well. Okay, as long as the state constitution or the general constitution doesn't specially prohibit it, it's the people that have the ultimate authority and sovereignty in those regards. And the only authority the state and or the government have is what we've delegated to them. By the consent of the governed, do they derive just authority. Otherwise, they're acting outside their scope, and they have gone rogue, Lowell.
And because they're the ones who have gone rogue, you can think of them as having rebelled against the Constitution. They are the ones in rebellion against the Constitution. So it's our duty, our job as citizens, to put down the rebellion. How do we do that? Well, we nullify unconstitutional acts and edicts and statutes and opinions of that general government. And by nullifying them, we will then put them in their place. Now, the founders, the framers, they expected us to do that. They expected us to do our job. And the general government is way beyond its original size and reach because we, the people, have allowed them to grow beyond their constitutional bounds. We haven't exercised the authority that we have as states and as localities like we ought. And so the constitutional powers that the states have and that the feds do not then becomes a very interesting topic of discussion. We often repeat James Madison, who in Federalist number 45 wrote, quote, "The powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the state government are numerous and indefinite," end of quote. So we often talk about that. We quote James Madison, but we rarely discuss whether the framers talked about the numerous and indefinite powers of the states or of the people. Well, turns out that there were a number of individuals during the 1780s and 90s who did talk about those numerous and indefinite powers of the states, Tench Cox being one of them. He enumerated some of these powers, and so we ask ourselves, who in the world was Tench Cox? Nobody today knows who that is. Well, Scott Bradley knows who he is, of course, because I've heard Scott Bradley quote Tench on past shows, Sam, but not very many people know about Tench Cox. Well, he was a Philadelphia businessman who served in the Confederate Congress and in subsequent years was to become the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. But you know what? His essays were among the most influential among the general public.
Hey, skip the break, will you please? Continue, Lowell.
Yeah, and if not the most influential of all of the pro-constitutional writers, he was probably second most or third most influential. Obviously, Hamilton, Madison, Jay, who wrote The Federalist, seemed to be more prominent. But The Federalist Papers were written for a New York audience, by the way, and were not widely distributed. If they had any impact at all, it was on the delegates to the New York Ratifying Convention. Tench Cox writings, however, seem to be distributed far more widely than the Federalist Papers, and they were written primarily for the people of all of the states, of all the ratifying conventions. And so if you were a ratifier at a state convention considering the U.S. Constitution, you probably read Tench Cox, what he wrote. And so I think it's important to highlight some of his observations, some of what he wrote down for the ratifiers at these conventions. He said, for instance, this quote right here, kind of long, but just bear with me. Quote, "The several states can create corporations, civil and religious, establish seminaries of learning, erect boroughs, cities, and counties, promote and establish manufacturers, open roads, clear rivers, cut canals, regulate inheritance and marriages, license taverns, alter the criminal law, constitute new courts and offices, establish ferries, erect public buildings, sell, lease, and appropriate the proceeds and rents of their lands and of every other species of state property, establish poorhouses, hospitals, and houses of employment, regulate the police, and many other things of the utmost importance to the happiness of their respective citizens. In short, besides the particulars enumerated, everything of a domestic nature must or can be done by them. End of quote. Whoo-wee. Now, that's a long paragraph, but let me pick out a couple words in this paragraph which are important. The phrase, establish poorhouses, hospitals, and houses of employment, stands out. I put hospitals in all capitals. The states may establish hospitals. Very interesting. That was a power they explicitly recognized as belonging to states or to local authorities, not the general government. So when people say, well, the general government, they have power to regulate health care. They can determine, you know, what doctors can and cannot do. That's a bunch of hooey. Only states have that authority. The federal government does not have that authority.
Let me explain why they wanted the states to have that authority, because in that creates competition. You got 50 states now. When they started, it was, 13 colonies or whatever, 13 states. But the whole idea was to create competition. And through the free market, they knew that it would rein in tyrannical behavior, rein in malpractice, rein in all these things that are negatives. And so people would be able to travel. If I felt like my state was horrible, I could go to Texas and get my health care taken care of and done in a responsible way. And the whole idea was to use the free market for competition, to reduce pricing, to make sure pricing was honest, and to make sure that malpractice and all kinds of other ills would be weeded out of the system. I mean, if it got to where, hey, if you go to get health care in Utah, it's really bad. You got to go, okay, this was designed for these purposes. That's why it's not a general government discussion. It's a state discussion. And the whole goal was to foster this competition to create accountability within the system organically. Lol.
And that's why I'm such a fan of federalism, because federalism allows each state to be different from another state. They have the freedom to be what they want to be. Massachusetts, they can have it.
Yeah, do you want to go to a murdering state where they literally bring in little girls to murder their babies, or do you want to be in a state that says, oh, no, we don't do that. We protect little girls in our state.
That's right.
That's kind of what we're talking about in an extreme example.
Well, yeah, and if you want, Mitt Romney care in Massachusetts, then you can move to Massachusetts and you can be a part of that. If you want to be out here in the West where, you know, you're not encumbered that way and you depend on yourself for your own health care, you know, living off the land or, you know, using herbs or alternative remedies, for example, then you have the option to do that here in one of the Western states. And that's why federalism is so helpful, so important to our overall freedom. You can vote with your feet. You can move to any state you want to. You can live the life you want to live just by choosing the state whose political ideology most closely aligns with yours. So it makes a lot of sense. But the top-down, one-size-fits-all programs that the general government wants to impose on everybody, every single state, that's what's causing the dissension and the contention in our country, Sam. I'm convinced of it that, you know, you get one-size-fits-all programs, and once they're imposed, like the vaccine mandate on all healthcare workers in all 50 states, that imposes contention. That just invites contention because, you know, you don't want to, you know, if you live in Massachusetts, yeah, maybe you want that imposition, but if you live in Utah, maybe you don't. Well, we need the liberty to decide what each state is going to be. Every state should have the liberty to decide what kind of political ideology they're going to embrace in their state, and then they live by it, and let other states do what they want to do. I don't care. If you in Massachusetts, I don't care what you do. It's okay. You do what you want to do. Just let me do in my state what I want to do. That's what I care about, Sam.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This is critical to understand. because you begin to understand the proper role of limited government when we go through this kind of exercise. You understand there's a state constitution, there's a general constitution, and you got to understand that we, the people, have an obligation. We have a responsibility to be involved. And the federal government is only authorized to exercise those powers delegated to it. I mentioned that. But that's the same reality for the states. We, the people, retain all other authorities. And we must use the checks and balances against those who would destroy liberty, those who would take power unrighteously unto themselves. They're rogue agents, folks. And you got to understand that. The states have certain powers the feds don't, or the general government doesn't. The general government has authority that the states don't. But you know what, folks? We got to be very, very clear about this, okay? We can't have people interfering outside of their roles. See, the problem is the Nullify Now doctrine has been lost for the most part. It's been brought back in recent years by wise patriots. It's a legitimate solution. Nullify Now is what we ought to do. Oftentimes going to the courts like these 22 states want to do isn't the wise course. They act like they have to have permission from some greater magistrate, which isn't true. See, the muscles of state sovereignty, ladies and gentlemen, are weak. Why? Because they have not exercised their authority. So their power is weak. Okay, do they have the authority? Yes, they do. But do they have the mojo, the power? No. And let's talk about why, because they haven't exercised their muscles, their authorities. It'll remain weak unless they exercise those muscles and start to push back consistently, lol. And the reason that they haven't pushed back consistently and the reason they've lost those muscles is because we've got on the federal dole.
Exactly right. It is the money after all. And if we begin to exercise our authority, if we start exercising those muscles, well, then the feds threaten to withhold the money from us. The money that we gave to them, they threaten to withhold from us. Well, there needs to be a state with the courage to say, we're not giving you our money until you do, you know, until you begin to exercise only the authority that we gave to you, right? That's what states need to stand up and do. And look, we're going to collect the money and we're going to keep it here. We will give it to you if you, you know, stay within the bounds of the Constitution. I just am waiting for a state with the courage to stand up and do that. But even before that, Sam, why isn't Attorney General Sean Reyes of Utah, why is he, you know, joining himself to this lawsuit and pleading like a slave for the general government to lift this mandate, right? I mean, I would like to see an attorney general stand up on his own two feet and just simply tell the federal government, we ain't doing that in our state because you don't have the authority to impose such a mandate. And
you can go look at the greatest 10th Amendment decision ever rendered in the Mack versus Bill Clinton case, if you will, to know the truth on this reality. And so an attorney general could do that, but here's the reason they don't. What they want to do is look like they're fighting the federal government, but never take action that creates real change. They want to look good. They want to appear as if they're fighting back. But land rights have been the quintessential point on this forever. The general government has no authority just to mandate they control all these lands. The equal footing clause of states entering the union, we could go on and on and on about it. But the list of reasons the general government can own land or have land or control land in the first place, there's all kinds of evidence on our side. But again, the states just always grovel before the government over land. Same thing's true here. They want to appear as if they're fighting and taking action, but they really don't want to take responsibility for solutions. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and which brings us back to the statement that I made earlier, Sam. It's our fault because we, the people, have not understood this principle, this Nullify Now doctrine. We, the people, have not pushed our public servants to Nullify Now. We have not asked the candidate for public office about the Nullify Now doctrine. We have not done our job, folks, and therefore the public servants that we've elected are not doing theirs. So it's up to us, folks, to change that. We got to change it. We have to be asking these questions of our public servants and of our candidates for everything from governor down to dog catcher. We need to understand that we retain the authority not delegated to the general government. And we need to exercise that authority to build the power, to build our muscles, so that we can properly stand and interpose between the general government and the citizens of our state. Now there is one example that came to light, Sam, just the last week or so. Texas Governor Abbott, now I don't know if he's grandstanding or if he's actually sincere, but his actions are laudable. So let's give him credit where credit is due. He put up a double high row of shipping containers at his border where there was no wall. He said he's tired of waiting for the general government to stop illegals from streaming into his state. Well, he shouldn't have waited for the feds to do anything in the first place. And so building a wall to repel the invasion is perfectly within his authority, Sam.
Well, and it's sad in my mind that he would even be at odds with the general government. They're shirking their constitutional responsibility for the border. See, things that the states rely on together, the general government was supposed to care for those things in an effort to have a united front. And this is where they're derelict in their duty at the general level. And I agree that Abbott has every authority to protect his people. When he swears his oath to the office that he took, he says he'll protect us from enemies, foreign and domestic. So he has every right to do this. But again, we've got a dereliction of duty at the general level. They should be like-minded in their efforts to carry out this defense of the people and protection of our nation.
There's another thing that Tench Cox wrote. He wrote a ton of stuff, but another point I wanted to highlight, Sam, he said that they, meaning the federal government, general government, cannot enact laws for the inspection of the produce of the country. Well, think of what the Department of Agriculture does, right? They're prohibiting the sale of raw milk.
Farm and so on and so on.
They're throwing Amish farmers off their property and destroying their produce. Their milk and cheese products, and there's, it's really rare when a sheriff will stand up for the Amish people of his state. The ones in Pennsylvania come to mind, and yet Tench Cox wrote, this was the understanding of the framers, those who ratified the Constitution, that the general government would not interfere, would not enact laws for the inspection of the produce of the country. And just one last one, Sam, they, meaning the general government, cannot interfere with, alter, or amend the Constitution of any state, end of quote. Well, of course, this is precisely what Federal Judge Robert Shelby did in December of 2013 when he issued his opinion that the definition of marriage that Utahns had placed in their Constitution was unconstitutional. It just boggles my mind that he would write that opinion and that we would roll over and acquiesce.
To a single tyrant. To a robed thug, single tyrant, did we cave. And now we're about to add insult to injury with the, quote, in my opinion, Disrespect Marriage Act, right?
Yeah. It's crazy, Sam. Well, my hope, Sam, though, is that our listeners now know the name of Tench Cox, C-O-X-E. It's how you spell his last name. Now, I know they've heard his name before with Scott Bradley on your show, and I just hope that we will have a newfound respect for Tench Cox. We'll know who he is. We'll look at what he writes, and that we'll begin to follow them more assiduously as a country. Sam?
You got to apply the principles, and you got to get involved, ladies and gentlemen, and that's why we always teach on this broadcast that we, the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore our grand old republic. We didn't lose liberty huge chunks at a time. It was slice by slice, little by little. And we're not going to get it back without efforts, little by little. Patience and dedication, clear understanding of the principles, and pure application of those principles are the keys. For Dr. Scott Bradley, for Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, and myself, Sam Bushman, LibertyRoundtable.com and LovingLiberty.net, we declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.